Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody out there in internet land. Welcome to another edition of the WTF Files with Louis Shoup. And I really am Louis Shoup. I'm not the other Louis Shoup. I'm not a fake Louis Shoup. I am real. And today I'm going to be talking about many things. One of the first things I want to mention, though, is I'm trying the experiment again from last week, where in a few minutes I'm going to be playing some pre-recorded snippets, and I would be curious as to any positive or even a constructive criticism of the actual broadcast. The only thing I'm going to talk about here live for the moment is Democratic candidate Bernie Sanders was in Philadelphia today pointing to the planned closure of a longtime Philadelphia teaching hospital as an example of corporate greed in healthcare. The Vermont senator spoke Monday to a crowd of hundreds outside Hanneman University Hospital and called on the parent company CEO to keep it open. Sanders said Hanneman's for-profit owners want to cash in on the 495-bed hospital's real estate and that a Medicare for All system he's proposing would protect hospitals in underserved areas. Sanders says he will introduce legislation to create a $20 billion emergency fund to help states and communities take over financially distressed hospitals. Hanneman's owner says it tried to keep the hospital open. Its bankruptcy filing said the hospital's finances were in unexpectedly bad condition when it took over last year. Well, I certainly hope they're going to be going through those books because that would be a terrible thing to happen otherwise. So at this point, the Election Insecurities Part 2 show is going to be several clips that I'm going to be playing here in a moment. Please give me some constructive feedback. Specifically, I'm curious as to how well it sounds pre-recorded over live, as well as volume control, sound control, speech compression, which there's an option for that here as well. So tell me what you think, and I'll talk to you soon.
The House Judiciary Committee intends to authorize subpoenas for 12 of former Special Counsel Robert Mueller's witnesses, including President Donald Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner, former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, his former deputy Rod Rosenstein, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, former Chief of Staff John Kelly, and former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski. Each of the witnesses provided crucial testimony to Mueller about Trump's effort to thwart the Russian investigation, and the committee's efforts are certain to meet resistance from a White House that has already blocked testimony from senior aides like former counsel Don McCann and former Trump advisor Hope Hicks. Imagine that for a WTF today. In other interesting WTFs, a pair of advocacy groups released a report today intended to inform Congress and the public as lawmakers look to debate reauthorization of Section 215 of the USA Freedom Act. The report, along with an accompanying fact sheet and other material by digital rights group Demand Progress and conservative advocacy group FreedomWorks, provides a deep dive into the provision, which is due to sunset in December. Section 215 enables the NSA's controversial call detail records program that gathers metadata on domestic text messages and phone calls. The groups are offering a list of more than 24 questions policymakers should consider before renewing the program. I'm hoping to post more information on that on the Facebook page for this show in the near future, and look for that elsewhere. To continue, privacy activists have argued that elements of the USA Freedom Act shouldn't be reauthorized, particularly Section 215, contending the program hasn't stopped any terrorist attacks and intrudes on people's private lives. In other words, it violates our Fourth Amendment. Last May, the NSA deleted more than 6 million call records that it collected in error. Last month, the ACLU released documents that showed improper collection continued well after that. The NSA has reportedly recommended scrapping the surveillance program. However, the Trump administration, in its infinite wisdom, has yet to formally outline a position on whether it wants to retain the authority. According to the Deputy Director of National Intelligence, Sue Gordon, it's being worked. Imagine that. Microsoft today released security updates for all supported operating systems on the July 2019 patch day. Windows 7 administrators get to choose between a security-only update or a monthly roll-up update. The main difference between the two is that security-only supposedly only contains security-related patches, while the monthly roll-up update may also include non-security changes. There is a certain KB number, which is this month's security-only update, seems to have included more than just security patches for the various components of the Windows 7 operating system. According to various reports, installing the security-only update replaces the notorious compatibility update from Windows Up to Date, and also making sure that upgrades to Windows 10 works as expected. This group of updates basically installs the telemetry package of bovine manure that Microsoft is infamous for with Windows 10. This tracking can do all sorts of invasive things and report various things back to Microsoft and anybody who sniffs the wire. This is why I highly recommend for this up and coming end of Windows 7 support, which is due to take place in January of 2020, I would strongly suggest either finding a hack for it that will extend support for the next 1 to 3 years after 2020, and or while you're upgrading to a much better, much safer, and potentially far more secure Linux operating system, of which there are many distributions out there. This is a WTF for people to think about here today. Please think and choose carefully. Among other interesting WTFs of the day, we have this giant convention, so to speak, being held at the White House today by Donald Trump that includes a conspiracy theorist, a meme creator, and a plagiarist. Those are just some of the eyebrow-raising attendees who will descend upon the White House today for an event that will likely become a forum for airing claims of anti-conservative social media bias. President Trump is calling it a social media summit, but the White House did not extend invites to representatives from Facebook or Twitter. Instead, the White House has invited its political allies to the event instead. In addition to inviting leaders from traditionally conservative think tanks such as the Heritage Foundation and Claremont Institute, the White House has requested the presence of far-right internet personalities and trolls, some of whom have pushed conspiracy theories, lies, and all manners of disinformation, misinformation, bad information, and other kinds of bovine manure. And perhaps the clearest example yet of President Trump's legitimizing fringe political allies. The White House has repeatedly declined to release a list of people it expects to attend, but some of the recipients have turned to social media to boast about being invited. Among them, Bill Mitchell, a radio host who has promoted the QAnon conspiracy theory on Twitter, Carpe Dunctum, there's a name for you, an anonymous troll who won a contest put on by the fringe media organization InfoWars for an anti-media meme, and Ali Alexander, doesn't that rhyme, an activist who attempted to smear Kamala Harris by saying she is not an American black following the first Democratic presidential debates. Other attendees include James O'Keefe, Charlie Kirk, Benny Johnson, and probably a whole bunch of other interesting creeps. Look for an update to this particular conference later in the day, as I'm sure it will provide a better and more interesting WTF than it already is on the surface. Amid growing concern about the vulnerability of the U.S. election system to hackers, Pennsylvania told election officials they had to upgrade their machines last year. But according to a Saturday report in the Associated Press, though some 60% of those systems have been upgraded at a cost of $14 or $15 million, many of them are reliant upon Windows 7, which Microsoft will stop supporting in January of 2020. So, too, are numerous systems across the country, according to the AP. An Associated Press analysis has found that, like many counties in Pennsylvania, the vast majority of 10,000 election jurisdictions nationwide use Windows 7 or an older operating system to create ballots, program voting machines, tally votes, and report counts. The AP surveyed all 50 states, the District of Columbia, and various territories, and found multiple battleground states affected by the end of Windows 7 support, including Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Florida, Iowa, Indiana, Arizona, and North Carolina. Also affected are Michigan, which recently acquired a new system, and Georgia, which will announce its new system soon. "Is this a bad joke?" said Marilyn Marks, executive director of the Coalition for Good Governance, an election integrity advocacy organization, upon learning about the Windows 7 issue. Her group sued Georgia to get it to ditch its paperless voting machine and adopt a more secure system. If Georgia selects a system that runs on Windows 7, Marks said, her group will go to court to block the purchase. According to the Associated Press, the election industry is dominated by three big companies, ES&S, Dominion Voting, and Hart Interscientific, which a 2007 study found collectively control 92% of election systems in place in the country. Only Dominion has developed newer systems that aren't affected by the Windows 7 issue, but it has acquired other companies' operating systems run on, even older operating systems, according to the AP. Developing newer systems require passing a lengthy federal certification process and would be extremely difficult to accomplish by the 2020 primary election. Now, a little extra tidbit for information on here. During my perusal at the voting machine show last year in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, I took many pictures of the devices they had, and they had all three of them down there. But Dominion in particular, I'm going to single out because those fucking idiots actually use Windows 10 on their machines. Windows 10 is a virus in and of itself made by Microsoft that collects as much information about you as it can and uploads that to their web server and anybody else sniffing the wire. There's one company that this specific article did not mention, and that is ClearVote. ClearVote, among all the other companies that are advertising here in Pennsylvania, is the only one, in my humble opinion, which stands half a chance of lasting around for a while because they use Ubuntu, which is a popular flavor of the Linux operating system. So it's free, it's open source, and it's a hell of a lot better than Dominion or Election Systems and Software or even Hart Interscientific. It gets bad. But going back to that for a moment, what I said earlier, end of life, means that Microsoft will stop officially supporting the Windows 7 operating system with free patches, including security updates critical to safeguarding against malware. Perhaps the biggest security concern with elections, considering that in-person voter fraud in the U.S. is extremely rare, and hackers believed to be tied to Russia have reportedly poked around the edges of state election networks. When an operating system enters this phase, it becomes easy prey for hackers who can exploit unpatched vulnerabilities. Microsoft did tell the AP that it would offer security updates for Windows 7 through 2023, though only on a paid basis. As it had been noted, annual fees for that support escalate each year after year and are high enough that businesses with hundreds of thousands of devices can expect to hand over a lot of money, though it's probable Microsoft will reach specific arrangements with bulk customers. As it was noted, it is unclear whether those fees would be paid by vendors operating on razor-thin profit margins or cash-strapped jurisdictions. While election systems are supposed to be air-gapped, meaning that no system directly involved in recording or tallying votes is connected to the Internet, the New York Times reported last year that some systems have come packaged with remote access software that could theoretically be penetrated by hackers. Additionally, the Times wrote, many local election sites report vote totals to their county election offices via phone lines, a practice that election officials and vendors say is safe because it doesn't use the Internet. The Times disputed that characterization, noting that many landlines now pass through cell towers or telecom routers that are creating a risk that hackers could use a Stingray-type device or IMSI catcher or a subverted telecom router to hack back into election systems and alter software to affect election outcomes. ES&S later admitted to congressional investigators that it sold systems with remote access software to a small number of customers from the years 2000 to 2006, which would have necessitated installing a modem on election systems for managing remote access by technicians. According to the AP, officials in Pennsylvania and Arizona say their vendors have assured support for upgrading the systems when a new version is certified. Officials in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Arizona say they have discussed the software issue with their vendors. Other states mentioned in this story didn't respond to AP requests for comment. Pennsylvania elections spokeswoman Wanda Morin, I know that name, said contract language allows such a software upgrade for free. Arizona election spokeswoman C. Murphy Herbert said ES&S has also assured the state that it will provide support to counties for an upgrade. The U.S. Election Assistance Commission developed the guidelines by which systems are certified, the AP reported, but the agency has no regulatory power and compliance is voluntary on the federal level. The tests are primarily designed to check whether systems function as intended, and there is no cybersecurity check, the AP concluded. Now, I'm going to add on to that story considerably. The woman that I mentioned before, Wanda Murin, M-U-R-R-E-N, she works for the Pennsylvania Department of State, I'm guessing as a spokeswoman and or press release agent of some kind. She's the woman I spoke with when I was at the Harrisburg voting machine show early last year. I think I scared the bejesus out of her because on the day I was walking through there, she gave me a press pass. I wasn't a press pass or press person. I'm not a working member of the active press, but she seen my backpack that I was wearing that day, and I had this cute little backpack on. On the outside, it said Hackers Inside. And I got that originally from one of my many trips down south to the Freaknik Computer Security Conference, which is held at the end of October, roughly every year in and or around Nashville, Tennessee. A totally awesome event. But I was wearing this bag that said Hacker Inside. So Wanda Murin kind of sort of got a conniption all over it and gave me a press pass before I started wandering around and taking pictures. Going onward, though, during that event, I seen other machines down there. ES&S was running Windows 7, I think. I mentioned that Dominion was actually running Windows 10. I think I already said that earlier. So yeah, they're running all this, and yet what the article doesn't mention, poor Lehigh County, Pennsylvania. This is where I'm at, just here in Allentown, PA. In November of 2016, I led the recount effort here in Lehigh County, and I posted, the link for that is on my GoFundMe page, which that is still active, and I need to ramp that up soon too. But during that recount, I discovered that the main tabulator server at the Lehigh County Government Center has not one, not two, but three visible network connections on the lower right-hand corner of the computer, which operates Windows Server 2000 Service Pack 0. And if you know anything about that, you might also know that Windows Server, before Service Pack 1, had support for raw IP sockets. And if you know anything about that, you can do a lot of interesting things with raw and custom-made packet sizes and such. So, yeah, we're fucked. We are so totally fucked. And I'm still going, so hold on. So, among other interesting things, as the 2020 presidential campaign heats up, individual states are ramping up education efforts to counter the threat posed by foreign disinformation campaigns to U.S. elections. A lack of action at the federal level has prompted many states to craft their own programs designed to counter foreign efforts to undermine American democracy and educate the next generation of voters in schools. It harms our democratic process when disinformation is at any point fed to voters in our democratic process, according to Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson. So I do think that as Secretaries of State, we have a responsibility to take it to the people. Declassified intelligence reports on Russian meddling, by design, refuse to analyze the effectiveness of American opinion. And though most of Russia's known propaganda efforts in the 2016 election were unsophisticated, notably with armies of trolls with strongly partisan opinions on polarizing subjects, they were effective enough to be widely quoted in the media and cited by a number of political figures, including Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn, Donald Trump's then-campaign manager Kellyanne Conway, and Michael Flynn, who went on to serve briefly as Trump's national security advisor and was later charged and pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about conversations with the Russian ambassador Sergei Kislyak. The Department of Homeland Security found no major foreign hacking campaigns dedicated to derailing the 2018 midterm elections. But the FBI's Foreign Influence Task Force, the agency dedicated to fighting disinformation tactics, alerted Facebook on the evening of that election of dozens of accounts and pages operated by Russia's IRA, the troll farm, that was active in 2016, which the company promptly deleted. Since then, Facebook and Twitter has cracked down on rings of disinformation accounts promoting the interests of U.S. adversaries, including Russia, Iran, and Venezuela. Federal government efforts to protect Americans from foreign propaganda have been hampered by a host of factors, including the fact that false or even bad faith speech isn't inherently legal in the U.S., and U.S. intelligence agencies haven't traditionally been tasked with directly countering foreign influence efforts. The U.S. intelligence community doesn't and shouldn't serve as the content police for American consumers of social news media, according to an intelligence official. There currently isn't anything resembling a federal plan to make disinformation education a part of the federal school system. Perhaps the most active state is West Virginia, where Secretary of State Mack Warner has commissioned a video from a local production company and created a short PowerPoint presentation that focuses on Russia's tactics, vetted by the State Board of Education, which he takes to high schools around the state. Not one vote was changed anywhere in America that has been documented, that anyone's been aware of, according to Warner. What the Russians have been attacking has been our mind, our thought process, the spirit of America. They're trying to push that division in there so citizens don't trust citizens, citizens don't trust the government, and citizens don't trust the democratic process. The report, drawing on federal briefings and media reports about recent foreign disinformation operations, is relatively lo-fi, according to Thomas Ridd, a Johns Hopkins professor who has authored a forthcoming book on information warfare. He's basically saying, don't trust the internet. Check your sources. We shouldn't need Russia to make that point, really. But if it helps, why not? But media literacy training does appear to help inoculate voters against propaganda. A study by the nonprofit International Research and Exchanges Board found that Ukrainians who took its media training were less likely to fall for Russian disinformation. Several other states are following West Virginia's leads, including the newly named president of the National Association of Secretaries of State, Iowa's Paul Pate, P-A-T-E, is encouraging other states to adapt Warner's presentation for their own use, as well as developing a way to present its materials in his home state, according to spokesperson Kevin Hall. Chief election officials in a number of other states, including Kansas, Michigan, Ohio, and Connecticut, all told that they were currently figuring how to include disinformation education campaign in their voter education programs. I think the biggest issue facing us is trust in the election, according to Denise Merrill, Connecticut's Secretary of the State. I am terribly worried that we will never see another uncontested presidential election in this country, and that is a travesty and will bring us down if we can't figure it out. Two federal agencies are also looking to advise Americans about disinformation campaigns, but with a smaller reach. The Department of Homeland Security, for its part, will soon release an infographic about how to spot bots and potential influence operations, illustrated by the divisive but nonpartisan issue of whether pineapple belongs on pizza. Wow. So the pirate is cooler than the ninja. And the FBI's security briefing that it recently provided to presidential campaigns and representatives for the Democratic and Republican parties, which includes a section on disinformation, is available online. Imagine. So with that, I think we'll leave off here for today. Please join me tomorrow afternoon at 5 p.m. When I'm intending, at least, on hosting an interview and make this show a bit more interesting than it already has been. This is Lewis Shoup. Thank you for joining the WTF Files with Lewis Shoup here today. And I will see you in the funny papers. Have a nice day.